You're listening to Polycyclones from the Political Science Department at Iowa State University, a podcast that explores the wide variety of ways our alumni and students are making a difference. Thank you for listening to the podcast, Polycyclones. And today, I am talking with David Bartholomew, who graduated from Iowa State in 2013, and he is currently the Policy Director for the Middle East and North Africa at the U.S. Development Finance Corporation. So, David, why don't we just start off by you telling us a little bit about how you got interested in politics?
Yeah, thanks, Alex, and happy to be on the pod. I guess I was thinking about this the other day, and it really probably originated in 2008. I was a senior in high school. I'm from Eagan, Minnesota originally, and it was during the 2008 elections. And I really hadn't paid a whole lot of attention to politics beforehand. But I think, you know, kind of the rise of Barack Obama, all of the fallout from the Iraq War, and everything that kind of culminated into the 2007-2008 political campaign really kind of drew me in, you know, especially as a first-time voter. I turned 18 about 2 months before the elections. And so I took my first poli-sci class. I had an elective in high school, and it was kind of eye-opening. I found it really fun, really interesting, really challenging. I was my professor, teacher at the time. We had a little kind of in-class sort of campaign competition where like half the class would be on one campaign and the other would be on, you know, ended up being the Obama campaign manager. And we kind of had to go through the motions of running a sort of mock campaign leading up to the election. So I think the origin of it probably dated to around that time. And then I committed to Iowa State soon after that. And I think just from that experience alone probably triggered my interest in pursuing poli-sci. I met Dr. Crystal the summer before I started in 2009. And then, you know, the rest is history, so to speak.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. And so you were, I think, a triple major, right, in political science, international studies, and history. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So. You know, you got to spend a little bit of time, obviously, looking at politics from a variety of different lenses. So what were some of the things you learned while you were studying politics at Iowa State that have been helpful for you and the things you've done since you graduated?
Yeah, I mean, I actually came into Iowa State. My initial plan was to be a teacher, a high school teacher. I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I wanted to teach, I guess when I came in as a freshman, I wanted to be a teacher teaching political science and history. So I pursued both of them. I think, though, the diversity of courses that I took at Iowa State really kind of opened my eyes to a lot of opportunities that I hadn't really thought of before. You know, I took Dr. Gabiam's Middle East Politics class, Politics and Ethics with you, Dr. Tuckness, American Government with Dr. Schmidt, and a few others that kind of really opened my eyes to more opportunities beyond this kind of narrow sort of teaching route that I had originally planned, which I was really happy with early on. But I believe around the time, it was the summer after my sophomore year in college, I was interning at the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party over the summer as a communications intern. It was just something I could do in Minnesota. I had a job on the side as well back home during the summer. And it was kind of strange. I got fully enwrapped in the Arab Spring around that time. Earlier in the year, in January, the protests started in Tunisia. This is 2011, early 2011, I believe. And it kind of domino effect across the region, Syria, Jordan, Libya, Egypt, saw a lot of governments fall. And I really said to myself, like, I can't stop watching this. This is fascinating. I want to be a part of this. And so I think something clicked. And I spoke to a number of professors in the department everyone gave me extremely helpful thoughts and considerations to take in. And that was kind of really what switched me over from the teaching route to international relations, international affairs, whatever you want to call it. And that kind of was a cataclysmic sort of summer, I think, in terms of my career trajectory. And that was due in large part to the diversity of the courses I took in at Iowa State, as well as the lived experiences I had as a result.
Oh, yeah. So that's interesting. So, you know, as you're learning these things in political science classes, it kind of gives you a new lens to understand the significance of these events that are unfolding in the Middle East, and those things come together and help you get interested in this. So talk about your career after you left Iowa State. Like, what were some of the different stages you've gone through in your career since you graduated?
Sure. So the following summer after my internship with the DFC, or sorry, with the DFL, the Democratic Farmer Labor Party, I took Dr. Gabayan's class, in the fall of 2011, if I'm correct, if I remember that right. It seems so long ago now. And I actually was talking to Dr. Gabayan about the Middle East. It kind of interested me, obviously, because of the Arab Spring and what kind of the interest that I held as a result of viewing that and observing and learning about it, and ended up doing an internship in the following summer in Washington, D.C. with the United Nations Relief and Works Agency. They are a sub-agency of the UN that supports the Palestinian refugees that came out of the 1948 war. Today, there's about 5 million registered refugees living in camps and cities throughout the West Bank, Gaza Strip, Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan. So it's a huge humanitarian and development agency that has had this mandate since the 40s or the early, late 40s. So anyway, as my internship with the Washington office for UNRWA, we worked with the State Department because the State Department provides the funding to UNRWA. It amounts to $300-$500 million a year. I'd have to go back and look at the historic numbers, but it was and still remains a significant donor to this UN agency. So fast forward a little bit, that was an amazing eye-opening experience. Got to understand how these organizations work with the State Department, how U.S. foreign policy is projected through these organizations, and how it kind of plays into the whole regional dynamics of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the Arab-Israeli conflict, and other sort of issues that affect the Middle East. So anyway, I think after that summer, I was pretty intent on going to graduate school. Everyone I had spoken to at the State Department, pretty much everyone I spoke to in the poli-sci department were telling me, you need to go to graduate school because it'll help you. I should caveat, that's not always the case. It's really your personal preference. It's not like if you want to enter into some route in international affairs, you need to go to graduate school. But for me, I thought that was the logical next step. And so upon returning from my senior year at Iowa State, I worked fervently to meet all of the required classes, fill out all the forms for all of the, I think I applied to probably 10 to 15 graduate foreign policy or international affairs graduate schools in the United States. So the flurry from about November of 2012 to about through February of 2013 was pretty nonstop. So anyway, I got accepted to a number of schools, and the one that interested me the most was George Washington University. The Elliott School of International Affairs is right in Foggy Bottom in Washington, D.C., literally across the street from the State Department. They had a pretty strong Middle East Studies program, strong ranking overall in graduate for their graduate program. And so I thought it was a logical place to be. So anyway, beginning in fall 2013, I started my two-year program at the International Affairs School at George Washington. And then you just really kind of start doing internships from there. So I did an internship with the State Department in their Bureau of Population, Refugees, and Migration. I did another one with the American Red Cross And then eventually I got a what's called a Pathways internship with the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID for short. It was a special assistant position in the front office of the Middle East Bureau. I was familiar with USAID. Little did I know it would become a long part of my career later on. But the Pathways program is a federal government recruiting mechanism that they use for students currently in school. I'd have to double check if it applies to both undergrad and graduate students. But you basically work while you're in school, and then upon graduation, there's usually an opportunity to convert permanently to the U.S. government. So I worked at USAID in this position for about a year, little over a year, and then I graduated from the Elliott School. And I believe after that, I went over to the American Red Cross. I had an opportunity to convert permanently at USAID, but an old colleague of mine during my internship at the American Red Cross noted that there was an opening on their Philippines recovery team. So I don't know if you recall, Alex, but there is the huge typhoon Haiyan that hit the central Philippines about 10 years ago, completely devastated the central part of the country. And the American Red Cross in their international services division fundraised about $100 million for relief and recovery.
Oh, so you were getting a chance to like potentially be a part of working with that reconstruction effort.
Exactly. Yeah. So this was, you know, again, this was 2015. So it was about a year and a half about after the kind of recovery efforts had started, but it was still a massive program with lots of growth. So I was based in Washington, D.C. on the Philippines recovery team. I was a program associate at the time, and we would go out to the Philippines, usually in Leyte province, which is where it was hit the worst. But the way the Red Cross works is, apart from the ICRC, which is the Central Humanitarian Affairs international body based in Geneva, they're the ones that are really going in severe conflict zones and others. The American Red Cross is part of what's called the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies. And they kind of work in a more bilateral, multilateral way to accomplish various roles in different countries and contexts. So whereas ICRC is more kind of like hard hitting, going in first on the ground type thing, the IFRC is more of a collective that tries to work off and use each other's comparative advantages to accomplish X, Y, and Z in a country. So we had partnerships with the Australian Red Cross, the Saudi Red Crescent, as well as the main one, the Philippines Red Cross. They have a huge mobilized operation in the Philippines that we worked closely with there for job creation, rebuilding houses, rebuilding schools, and really far reaching. It started everywhere from the main city Tacloban to some of the most remote parts of the province. So, long story short, it was a really eye opening international focused experience for me, especially on the humanitarian and recovery side. But I did know that at some point this would come to an end. And in doing so, I found that I was still eligible to apply for what's called the Presidential Management Fellows Program. Or PMF for short. So PMF is another U.S. government recruiting mechanism for graduate students or students in law school or PhD programs. You're allowed to apply to it in your last year of your program or up to 2 years afterwards. And basically the way it works is you get hired by a federal agency. You start there, you work there for a little while, your term is for 2 years. So you'll go there, you'll work for a little bit, and then you get to go on two development rotations. So basically every agency is different, but you can go and sort of find a spot for you. If, you know, for example, you're interested in European affairs, you can go work in the Europe Bureau at the State Department, or you can go to an embassy for, you know, 3 to 6 months and kind of do this sort of professional development experience without, you know, losing pay, without worrying about coming back to a position that's not there anymore. It's really kind of this unique program that the U.S. government has fostered and has kept alive since the 70s. And it's really a good opportunity to kind of find your way in the federal government and experience a lot of different areas to work in, regional experiences, and other things that the federal government has to offer before you kind of settle down and permanently convert into a position. I was actually able to get my first position with the Office of the Global AIDS Coordinator, or what's called PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. It was started during the George Bush era, catalyzed tens of billions of dollars for AIDS vaccines and assistance all over the world, and has effectively rendered the disease minimal. I don't want to understate how severe it is still in some parts of the world, but it's an incredible program the U.S. government put together, and probably the most successful disease-focused intervention that the world has ever done. So anyway, I was hired as what's called a multilateral diplomacy advisor. My job was the board and policy relationship with the UN AIDS organization, which is the United Nations organization focused on AIDS. They'd meet twice a year in Geneva at their headquarters. So my job was to make sure our ambassador was prepared for those meetings, liaise with other countries and other donors, who were a part of that process and part of that board. And then participate in negotiating over board resolutions and other related issues on the policy front. So anyway, I did that for about 7 months, and then it was time for my rotations. So, you know, like I said, PEPFAR is a wonderful place, wonderful people, incredibly, incredibly successful story. But I knew that I kind of wanted to get back into the Middle East. And so I did my first rotation in the Office of Israel and Palestinian Affairs at the State Department's Bureau of Near Eastern Affairs. And that time in 2018, it was just after the administration had moved the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. There was a lot of upheaval and change going on in the world. And so my job, I was an economic advisor. So we would largely focused we'd support the White House efforts and our colleagues in the field in Jerusalem and in Tel Aviv on any issues related to the Palestinian economy and the development of the Palestinian economy. So everything from trade and customs and electricity, telecommunications, anything that was of benefit to the Palestinian economy and, you know, help develop the Israeli-Palestinian relationship further, I was working on. That was a 6-month rotation. And then I did my second rotation. I actually went back to USAID in the Middle East Bureau. I had from my time working there during graduate school, I had a number of contacts, and I reached out, asked if there was any opportunities there for a second rotation. And I ended up getting a second rotation on the Egypt desk at USAID. And to my luck, the agency was actually able to take on my PMF assignment and allowed me to convert through USAID. After the PMF program is 2 years. So after 2 years, I converted fully into a civil servant position with USAID. So from there, I worked on Egypt. I then worked on Lebanon for about a year. I then worked as the team lead on Jordan and finally West Bank and Gaza. Kind of coming full circle, so to speak. And then most recently, I was up in our agency front office as a national security advisor. I was with Samantha Power coming in to lead the agency at the beginning of the Biden administration. USAID had an elevated role at the National Security Council, participating in a lot more what's called deputies committee meetings and principals committee meetings, where you have deputies of agencies or principals or heads of agencies and departments in the federal government coming together. And USAID was playing a much bigger role in that space. And so my position at the time was to prepare the administrator and the deputy administrator for any meetings that related to Asia and the Middle East, which was my portfolio on that team. So it was quite a busy time, and I learned quite a bit, and it was kind of like a trial by fire, so to speak. And so I was there through March of this year, and I've now recently moved over to the what's called the U.S. International Development Finance Corporation, or the DFC. I'm the policy director for Middle East and North Africa affairs. And so it's the way to think about DFC, it's the U.S. government sort of private equity firm with a developmental impact focus. That sounded like a mouthful, but it's really not that complicated. It's a tool, it's an international development tool the U.S. government has almost entirely focused on the private sector. So if we have a company that wants to set up, it wants to do a solar, build a solar farm in Jordan, for example, they might come to the DFC. Maybe they need a loan. Maybe they need political risk insurance or some other kind of financial product that DFC has. And we can decide whether that's an organization or a company and a project that's worth investing in. And we can help make it happen. We catalyze other investors to come in. We work with other international development finance institutions. So think like the World Bank, the International Finance Corporation, the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, and not a litany of others. That's really what DFC does. They work with the private sector to accomplish development goals. And that, and the rest is history.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. Like all, like in its 10 years, right? All the different experiences and angles you've been able to have working with these things related to foreign policy and international development. So, you know, I think we're probably going to have people listening to this podcast who are interested in some of these same topics and issues. So if you were going to give a piece of advice to someone who's interested in international affairs, or international development, some of the areas, foreign policy that you've been working in, what advice would you give to them?
A couple of things. First, read. Just read. Read, listen to podcasts, learn enough about your interest, whether that's a topical thing like international telecommunications, water policy, or just a region, if it's the Middle East, if it's Europe, South America, whatever. Just embrace your interest and really kind of find what within that subsection interests you the most and try to hone that skill. So, you know, when you're going to look for internships, when you're looking for perhaps graduate programs or jobs upon graduation, you kind of know where your interests lie. But secondly, you know, get involved. There's so many things at Iowa State that you can take advantage of. After my sophomore year and when I kind of had the idea, I wanted to get into international affairs, maybe go to graduate school. I immediately joined the Iowa State Daily. I joined the Student Senate. I was actually the president of the Model UN team and a couple other organizations on campus. And it really just kind of solidified for me that, you know, in meeting all these people in these campus activities, talking to all the professors and getting a well-rounded experience helped me so much more down the line rather than if I had just tried to go at this alone, so to speak. So, you know, working in journalism and getting involved in campus activities like Student Senate and so on, it just kind of gives you a whole of body, a holistic approach to international affairs that impacts you and benefits you so much more down the line than you realize.
Well, David, that's great advice. And I just want to thank you for being on the podcast, and thanks to everyone who listened.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Alex. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Views expressed are not necessarily those of Iowa State University or the Department of Political Science. If you have ideas for topics or guests for future episodes, or if you want to share your thoughts, email polycyclones, that's polycyclones, @iastate.edu.